24. A few moments of muffled shrieking as the train pulled off again and started to gain speed. It jerked Pip's pen, making her scribble a line down the page through her essay introduction. She sighed, ripped the piece of paper from the pad, and screwed it into a ball. It was no good anyway. She was on the train to Westport. Ravi was coming straight from work to meet her at the station. Pip looked away from the blank, expectant page and out the window instead. They had to be nearly there. She'd taken the train to fit in some application time, but had nothing to show for it.
"Next stop, Westport,"
the conductor announced, like Pip had summoned him with her thoughts. She packed her notepad into her backpack and stood while the train slackened and came to a stop with a mechanical sigh. She skipped onto the platform and down the stairs. Ravi was waiting for her outside the station.
"Sarge," he said, flicking his dark hair out of his eyes. "I was just coming up with our crime-fighting theme tune. So far, I've got chilled strings and a pan flute when it's me, and then you come on with some heavy Darth Vader-ish trumpets."
"Why am I the trumpets?" she said.
"Because you're the scary one, and you stomp when you walk. Sorry to be the one to tell you."
For some reason, Pip didn't mind when it was him teasing her. Maybe she even liked it. She pulled a face at him, then reached for her phone, typing in the Ivy House Inn for directions. The line appeared on screen, and they followed the 5-minute-long walking directions, Pip's blue circle avatar sliding along the route in her hands. They reached their destination and looked up. There was a small wooden sign just before the drive that read Ivy House Inn in faded letters. The driveway was sloped and pebbled, leading to a red brick house almost wholly covered in creeping ivy. It was so thick with the green leaves that the house itself seemed to shiver in the wind. Pip and Ravi crunched up the drive to the front door, and Pip jabbed the metal doorbell, letting it ring out for one long note. They heard a small voice inside and shuffling steps. Then the door swung inward, sending a tremor through the ivy around the frame. An old woman with fluffy gray hair, thick glasses, and a very premature Christmas sweater stood before them and smiled.
"Hello, dears," she said. "I didn't realize we were expecting anyone. What name did you make the reservation under?"
She ushered Pip and Ravi inside and closed the door. They stepped into a dimly lit lobby with a sofa and coffee table on the left and a white staircase running along the far wall.
"Oh, sorry," Pip said, turning back to face the woman. "We don't actually have a reservation."
"I see. Well, lucky for you two, we aren't booked up, so..."
"Sorry," Pip cut in, looking awkwardly at Ravi. "I mean, we're not looking to stay here. We're looking for... We have some questions for the owners of the inn. Are you..."
"Yes, I'm the owner," the woman smiled, looking unnervingly at a point just left of Pip's face. "Ran it for 20 years with my David. He was in charge of most things, though. It's been hard since my David passed a couple years ago. But my grandsons are always here, helping me get by, driving me around. My grandson Henry is just upstairs cleaning the rooms."
"So 5 years ago, you and your husband were running this place?" Ravi asked.
The woman nodded, and her eyes swayed over to him.
"Very handsome," she said quietly, and then to Pip, "Lucky girl."
"No, we're not..." Pip said, glancing at Ravi. She wished she hadn't.
Out of the old lady's eyeline, he shimmied his shoulders and pointed to his face, mouthing, "Very handsome." Pip rolled her eyes and hoped he couldn't read anything else on her face.
"Would you like to sit down?"
The woman gestured to a green velvet sofa beneath a window.
"I know I would."
She shuffled over to a leather armchair facing the couch. Pip walked over, intentionally treading on Ravi's foot as she passed. She sat down, knees pointed toward the woman, and Ravi squeezed in beside her, still with that smug grin on his face.
"Where's my..."
the woman said, patting her sweater and her pants pockets, a blank look falling over her face.
So, Pip said, drawing the woman's attention back to her. "Do you keep records of people that have stayed here?"
"It's all done on the computer now, isn't it?" the woman said. "Sometimes by the telephone. David always handled the bookings. Now Henry does it for me."
"So how did you keep track of the reservations you had?" Pip said.
"My David did it. Had a spreadsheet printed out for the week."
The woman shrugged, staring out the window.
"Would you still have your reservation spreadsheets from 5 years ago?" asked Ravi.
"No, no. The whole place would be flooded in paper."
"But do you have the documents saved on a computer?" Pip pressed.
"Oh, no. We threw David's computer out after he passed. It was a very slow little thing," she said. "My Henry does all the bookings for me now."
"Can I ask you something?" Pip said, unzipping her backpack and pulling out a folded printout. She straightened out the page and handed it to the woman. "Do you recognize this girl? Has she ever stayed here?" The woman stared down at the photo of Andy, the one that had been used in most newspaper reports. She lifted the paper to her face, then held it at arm's length, then brought it close again.
"Yes,"
she nodded, looking from Pip to Ravi to Andy.
"I know her. She's been here."
Pip's skin prickled with nervous excitement. "You remember this girl staying with you 5 years ago?" she said. "Do you remember the man she was with? What he looked like?" The woman's face muddied, and she stared at Pip, her eyes darting right and left, a blink with each change in direction.
"No," she said. "No, it wasn't 5 years ago. I saw this girl. She's been here."
"In 2014, Pip said.
"No, no."
The woman's eyes settled past Pip's ear.
"It was just a few weeks ago. She was here. I remember."
Pip's heart sank a few hundred feet. "That's not possible," she said. "This girl has been dead for 5 years."
"But I..."
The woman shook her head, the wrinkled skin around her eyes folding together.
"But I remember. She was here. She's been here."
5 years ago?" Ravi prompted.
"No,"
the woman said, anger creeping into her voice.
"I remember, don't I? I don't."
"Grandma!"
a man's voice called from upstairs. A set of heavy boots thundered down the stairs, and an auburn-haired man came into view.
"Hello,"
he said, looking at Pip and Ravi. He walked over and held out his hand.
"I'm Henry Hill," he said.
Ravi stood and shook his hand.
"I'm Ravi. This is Pip. Can we help you with something?"
he asked, shooting a concerned look over at his grandmother.
"We were just asking your grandma a couple questions about someone who stayed here 5 years ago," said Ravi.
Pip looked back to the old woman and noticed that she was crying. Tears snaked down her tissue paper skin, dropping onto the printout of Andy. The grandson must have noticed as well. He walked over and squeezed his grandma's shoulder, taking the piece of paper out of her shaking grip.
"Grandma," he said, "why don't you put the kettle on and make us some tea? I'll help out these people here, don't worry."
He eased her up off the chair and steered her toward a door to the left of the hall, handing the photo of Andy to Pip as they passed. Ravi and Pip looked at each other, questions in their eyes, until Henry returned a few seconds later,
closing the kitchen door to muffle the sound of the boiling kettle. Sorry, he said with a sad smile. She gets upset when she gets confused. The Alzheimer's, it's starting to get bad. I'm actually just cleaning up to put the place on the market. She keeps forgetting that.
I'm sorry, Pip said. We should have realized. We didn't mean to upset her.
No, I know. Of course you didn't, he said. Can I help with whatever it is?
We were asking about this girl. Pip held up the paper. Whether she stayed here 5 years ago.
And what did my grandma say?
She thought she'd seen her recently, just weeks ago. She swallowed. But this girl died in 2014.
She does that quite often now, he said, looking between the two of them. Gets confused about times and when things happened. Sometimes still thinks my granddad is alive. She's probably just recognizing your girl from 5 years ago, if that's when you think she was here.
Yeah, Pip said. I guess.
Sorry, I can't be of more help. I can't tell you who stayed here 5 years ago. We haven't kept the old records, but if she recognized her, I guess that gives you your answer.
Pip nodded. It does. Sorry for upsetting her.
Will she be okay? Said Ravi. She'll be fine, Henry said gently. Tea will do the trick.
They stepped out of Fairview Station, the town dimming as it turned 6 o'clock and the sun slumped off to the west. She'd gotten a text from Zach on the train.
Where are you? Did you forget about debate team?
She had. She'd forgotten all about it. She tried to ignore the guilt. She'd make it up to him somehow. Pip's mind whirled, spinning over the many shifting pieces of Andy's life, separating them and putting them back together in different combinations. So, she said, I think we can confirm that Andy stayed at the Ivy House Inn. The bathroom tiles and the woman's time-confused recognition were proof enough of that. They turned right into the parking lot, heading for Pip's car down the far end.
And if Andy was going to that inn, Ravi said, must be because that's where she met secret older guy, and they were both trying to avoid getting caught.
Pip nodded in agreement. So that means that whoever secret older guy was, he couldn't have Andy over at his house. And the most likely reason for that would be that he lived with his family or a wife. This changed things. Pip carried on. Daniel Da Silva lived with his new wife in 2014, and Max Hastings was living with his parents, who knew Sal well. Both of them would have needed to be away from home to carry on a secret relationship with Andy. And let's not forget, Max has a naked photo of Andy taken inside the Ivy House Inn, a photo he supposedly found. She said, using air quotes around the word.
Yeah, Ravi said, but Howie Bowers lived alone. If it was him Andy was secretly seeing, they wouldn't have needed to stay in a hotel.
That's what I'm thinking, Pip said. Which means I think we can rule out Howie as a candidate for secret older guy, although that doesn't necessarily mean he isn't the killer.
True, Ravi agreed. But at least it clears the picture a little. It wasn't Howie that Andy was seeing behind Sal's back in March, and it wasn't him she spoke of ruining.
They had deduced all the way over to her car. Pip fiddled in her pocket and blipped the keys. She opened the driver's side door and shoved her backpack inside, Ravi taking it on his lap in the passenger seat. As she started to climb in, she looked up and noticed a man leaning against the far fence, about 60 feet away, in a green parka coat with bright orange lining. Howie Bowers, furred hood up, nodding at the man beside him. A man gesticulating wildly as he mouthed silent and angry-looking words. A man in a smart wool coat with floppy blonde hair. Max Hastings.
Pip's face drained. She dropped into her seat.
What's wrong, Sarge?
She pointed out his window. Max Hastings, who had lied to her yet again, saying he never bought drugs in Fairview after Andy disappeared, that he had no clue who her dealer was. And here he was, shouting at that very drug dealer, the words lost to the distance between them.
Oh,
Ravi said. Pip started the engine and pulled out, driving away before either Max or Howie could spot them, before her hands started to shake too much. Max and Howie knew each other. Yet another tectonic shift in the world of Andy Bell. Pippa Fitz-Amobi. October 10th, 2019. Capstone Project Log, Entry 27. Max Hastings. If anyone should go on the persons of interest list in bold, it's him. He's lied twice now in Andy-related matters, and you don't lie unless you have something to hide. Let's recap. He's an older guy. He has a naked picture of Andy taken in a hotel where he could very well have been meeting her in March 2014. He was close to both Sal and Andy. He regularly bought Rohypnol from Andy, and he evidently knows Howie Bowers pretty well. This also opens up the possibility of another pair who could have colluded in Andy's murder, Max and Howie. I think it's time to follow this Rohypnol trail. No normal 19-year-old buys roofies for school parties, right? And it's the thing that links this messy Max-Howie-Andy triangle. I'll message some 2014 Fairview High alumni and see if I can figure out what was going on at calamity parties. If what I'm suspecting is true, could Max and Rohypnol be key players in what happened to Andy that night? I just asked Naomi if she knew whether drinks would get spiked at calamities. She says she never saw or heard anything of the sort. If it was happening, Max must have kept it well hidden. Maybe his friends hadn't really known him at all, not the real him. Persons of interest: Jason Bell, Naomi Ward, secret older guy, Nat Da Silva, Daniel Da Silva, Max Hastings in bold, Howie Bowers. Pippa Fitz-Amobi. October 11th, 2019. Capstone Project Log, Entry 28. Emma Hutton replied to my text while I was at school.
Yeah, maybe. I do remember girls saying they thought their drinks had been spiked. But TBH, everyone used to get really, really drunk at those parties. So they were probably just saying it because they didn't know their limits or for attention. I never had mine spiked.
Chloe Birch also replied, 40 minutes ago when I was watching a movie with Josh.
No, I don't think so. I never heard any rumors like that. But girls sometimes say that when they've drunk too much, don't they?
I also emailed a few people who were tagged in photos with Naomi at Calamities in 2014. I lied slightly. Told them I was a reporter for CNN named Penny because I thought it would encourage them to talk, if they had anything to say, that is. One of them just responded. Thursday, October 10th, 8:43 p.m., one day ago. From pfa20@gmail.com to hanslaraj116@yahoo.com. Subject: information request for an independent CNN news story. Dear Laura Hands, I'm a reporter working on an independent news story for CNN about underage house parties and drug use. From my research, I can see that you used to attend certain house parties that were nicknamed Calamities in the Fairview area in 2014. I wonder if you can offer any comment as to whether you ever heard any rumors or saw any instances of girls having their drinks spiked at these events.
I would be extremely grateful if you can provide any information regarding this matter, and please know that any comments you offer will be anonymized and treated with the utmost discretion. Thank you for your time. Yours sincerely, Penny Firth Adams. 9:22 p.m., 2 minutes ago, from HansLaraJ116@yahoo.com to me. Subject, information request for an independent CNN news story.
Hi, Penny. No worries at all. I'm happy to help. Actually, I do remember there being talks of drinks being spiked. Of course, everyone used to drink to excess at these parties, so the issue was a little confused. But I did have a friend, Natalie Da Silva, who thought she had her drink spiked at one of those parties. She said she couldn't remember anything of the night, and she'd only had one drink. I think that was in early 2014, if I remember correctly. I might still have her phone number if you wanted to get in contact with her. Good luck with your report. Could you let me know when it airs? I'd be interested to see it. Best wishes, Laura.
Pippa Fitz Amobi, October 12th, 2019. Capstone Project Log, Entry 29. Two more responses this morning while I was out at Josh's soccer game. The first one said she didn't want to offer any comment. The second one said this. 12:44 p.m., 57 minutes ago. From JoannaRiddell95@gmail.com. To me. Subject, information request for an independent CNN news story.
Dear Penny Firth Adams, thank you for your email. I agree that it is a really important topic that needs more attention in mainstream media. I actually do know of instances of drink spiking happening at those house parties. Around February 2014, one of my friends, who I won't name, got completely messed up. She couldn't speak and could barely move at all. I had to get some guys to help me carry her out to her dad's car. And the next morning, she couldn't even remember being at the party. A few days later, she asked me to go with her to the Fairview police station to report the incident. She went and spoke to this young officer. Can't remember his name. Then I'm not sure anything ever came of it. But I was always careful to watch my drinks after that. I hope this is helpful for your report. And feel free to come back to me if you have more questions. All best, Joe Riddell.
The plot keeps thickening. I think I can safely assume that drinks were being spiked at calamity parties in 2014, though the fact wasn't widely known to partygoers. So, Max was buying Rohypnol from Andy, and girls were getting their drinks spiked at the parties he started. It doesn't take a genius to put the two together. Not only that, Nat Da Silva may very well have been one of the girls whose drink he spiked. Could that be relevant to Andy's murder? And did anything happen to Nat the night she thought she'd been drugged? I can't ask her. She's what I would call an exceptionally hostile witness. To top it all off, Joanna Riddell said that her friend thought she was drugged and reported it to the Fairview police, to a young male officer. Well, I've done my research, and the only young and male officer in 2014 was, yep, you guessed it, Daniel Da Silva. It's a tiny police force for a tiny town. The next youngest male officer was 41 in 2014. Joanna said nothing came of the report. Was that just because the unnamed girl reported it after any drug would have been out of her system? Or was Daniel involved somehow, trying to cover something up? I think I just stumbled on another connection between names on the persons of interest list, between Max Hastings and the two Da Silvas. I'll call Ravi later, and we can brainstorm what this possible triangle could mean. But my focus needs to be on Max right now,
He's lied enough times, and now I have real reason to believe he was spiking girls' drinks at parties and secretly seeing Andy behind Sal's back at the Ivy House Inn. If I had to stop the project right now, Max would be suspect number one. But I can't just go and talk to him about this. He's another hostile witness, and now possibly one with a history of assault. He won't talk without leverage. So I have to find some by way of serious cyberstalking. If I can get onto his Facebook profile, Nancy Tango Tits, I can go through every post and picture, looking for something that connects him to Andy or the Ivy House Inn or drugging girls. Something I can use to make him talk, or, even better, go straight to the police with.